Well, good afternoon, everybody. My name is Dave Wilson, and if all this stuff works right here in front of me, we're about to embark on an adventure together called Dave Wilson's Part of Radio Liberty. Yes, it's my very great privilege to be able to sit in here for Dr. Stanley Monteith for a couple of days while he's away. We've got some great guests lined up for you, and I think we're going to have a lot of fun. Particularly today, as we have a favorite person of mine whose outtake and uptake and insight on what's going on you'll be interested in knowing. And if you want to join us in this conversation, you can, of course. We'd love to have you join, calling 464-8295 or 888-245-4237 at your leisure when you figure out what you want to say. Of course, I have to remind you that the views expressed on the live program here are my views, those of my guests, and don't necessarily reflect the views of the station to which you are tuned. They're going to reflect the views of Alan Karuba this afternoon. Hi, Alan. How are you?
I'm just fine. Thank you.
It's nice to hear your voice on the radio. You know, you and I have done this kind of a program, that which we are about to embark upon right now, about 4 years running now.
Oh, well, that's a tradition.
Well, I think it almost is. I was thinking of having coffee cups made, perhaps small shirts, you know.
A couple of T-shirts, you know?
Yeah.
Talk with Alan.
Whatever. You run the Anxiety Center back there in New Jersey, a place which is overrun with deer, but no black bear anymore, which is
a
convenient
thing. Oh, no, we have black bear.
Oh, you still have black. And you are a pundit, a prognosticator, and a person who has a keen eye on what's really going on in the world, and you establish your website, the National Anxiety Center, or anxietycenter.com, to reveal the agenda behind a lot of what's going on in our world today. Would you say that's basically correct?
I'd say you were quite correct. I started in 1990 because I literally got fed up with all the daily headlines that essentially said you're going to die.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to die from everything you eat and everything you breathe and everything you drink, and you're going to die if you smoke, and you're going to die if you have a soda pop or a pizza or a piece of meat, or, you know, it just, all of this stuff is just, it has virtually no basis in science, and yet day after day the claims are made and the laws are passed, and then you wake up one morning and there's just one less thing you can do, or some mandated thing that you have to do. You know, generations of people actually survived riding on bicycles without having to, by law, wear headgear.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a nice idea, and I suppose it makes sense, but why do we have to pass law after law after law, which essentially says, well, you're just too stupid to take care of yourself, and the government's going to look out for you.
That's the crux of it right there, and that's the kernel of truth that we want to discuss from a myriad of views this afternoon on Radio Liberty. Yes, it is Radio Liberty, ladies and gentlemen. Dr. Stan is away. Put him on your prayer list. He'll be back with us next week. And, you know, Alan, I had a conversation with a young man who has a four-week-old baby daughter last night, and we were kind of joking. We went to a place one time when my grandchildren were born called Babies R Us. It's a great store.
Mm-hmm.
But when my kids were born, I mean, you know, we put them in a little kind of a plastic molded thing on the front in the floorboard of the car and drove around. and now we go in there, and there are literally things available for hundreds of dollars, which you are mandated by the government to place your child in if you want to carry him from place to place.
Yeah.
And we were laughing and saying, you know, we could make a fortune if we could, for example, make a little, some kind of a sensor that you could put down in a diaper, and it would turn color, you know, turn blue or red if something were to happen in there. And all you'd have to do is label it baby safety sensor, and the government would mandate that everybody had it.
Oh, probably.
What's wrong with our government? Why are they doing that? Let's get down to the basic answer right away, and then discuss the various ramifications.
What's wrong is it's too big, and it's getting bigger, and the nature of government is to fill the vacuum and to ensure that the budget gets even larger the following year, and to spend whatever money has been allocated to them this year. God forbid there's any left over.
Mm.
So you have the endemic problem of all government, which is to become too large. And of course, the Founding Fathers fashioned the Constitution specifically to make sure most of the power remained with the states, and that we are, in fact, a republic of separate republics.
Mm-hmm.
It is the United States of America. So we have this, you know, federal government, which up to the days of FDR was a relatively small enterprise, and it tended to what the Constitution told it to. And after FDR, it just, you know, it just exploded in size, and it's been doing it ever since. And the problem is, it doesn't matter whether you're voting for Democrats or Republicans, you're getting the same expansion. I mean, under Bush, I love his foreign policy, but under Bush's domestic policy is just maddening. I mean, $49 billion for an educational program that is just, a very bad joke. When, in fact, harking back to what I said before, and you can read the Constitution from cover to cover, you will not find the word education in there.
Right, and in 94, when the Congress went over to so-called Republican control, one of their things about getting elected was, let's get rid of a lot of this stuff, and absolutely nothing happened.
Yeah, well, that's government today. We elect people, and nothing happens. And we send them to Congress, and, you know, they hit D.C., and a degree of corruption sets in. Not criminal, necessary, but corruption of their values, the corruption of the very reasons that they ran for public office.
Right.
And there's some very good books on that very topic.
Our government was established with three different entities who are supposed to check up on one another and keep everybody kind of in line, the legislature, the executive, and the judicial. And now there's kind of a blurring, and sometimes I'm not even sure whether it's not the judicial people, the big nine, the black boys, who are running the country through their legislature, literally, by interpreting the Constitution as it is. And then I look at the executive branch and see all this being done by executive order because we're in a, quote, state of emergency, according to Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And then I look at the legislature, both senators and representatives, who don't listen to the people once they cross the Mississippi River going east anyway from California, and just do whatever they darn well please. It seems like all three of those branches get together and decide whatever they want to do to forward this one world government sort of thing, or socialism for sure.
Yeah. Oh, well, you know, we have a capitalist economy run by a socialist government.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all these social programs and millions and billions of dollars just wasted on, you know, studying sex lives of catfish and things like that. I mean, that's socialism. It's insane. So it's very confusing. The problem is, of late, I was reading a commentary on this today. I don't remember exactly from where, but to the effect that Congress basically had just abandoned its own legislative job and handed it off to the courts to deal with the so-called hot issues, and I think there's a lot of truth to that. What is frightening to think is that the Congress voted the U.S. Patriot Act.
Right.
It's 300-plus pages without even reading it.
That's what was scary, and that's what was in my mind. Our great minds must be running along the same track here this
minds.
Afternoon.
There's no question about that.
It's a scary thing when you confront a congressperson. Notice how politically correct I am.
You are very good today.
That how could you have even voted on this when you don't know what you're voting for? And the answer to that is usually, well, my staff explained to me what was going on. Well, I didn't elect his staff or didn't vote for his staff, and I'm paying for his staff probably, but some of those staff people have been around up there for 30 years.
Oh, yeah.
And that's a real scary thing. And hopefully, ladies and gentlemen, it will be scary for you, too. But fear not, your anxious demeanor can be alleviated by going to www.anxietycenter.com, where our guest, Mr. Alan Karuba, posts all kinds of stuff that deflate the fear that you may feel by watching the national media, and often the O'Reilly or Fox News or some of these other people who stand in front of raging forest fires and talk about global warming to get you to thinking all this is. All you have to do is go outside in Portland right now and talk about global warming, where they've had 3 or 4 days of 19-degree weather. But anyway, Alan, the media is something that seems to be more and more in control of our lives. And would you say it's a fair statement that the media is biased as well?
Oh, the media's always been biased. I mean, you know, it's reporters are, and this is a generality, but reporters are generally liberal in their outlook on and take on issues and events, and editors who presumably, you know, are older are relied upon to be somewhat more conservative. But you can tell what the political bias in most media is. They're just reading a couple of stories in any newspaper out of the. Of course, you have the New York Times, which is just a joke. I mean, it's not even practicing journalism anymore. It's just one huge, endless piece of propaganda for one socialist agenda or another.
And yet, in every paper you see, what are all the columnists writing for but the New York Times, is quoted in the masthead?
Yeah. The Times, just to dwell on it for a minute, since the 1980s or so, has been telling us that global warming is real, and the thousands of scientists agree that it's real, and they just go on and on, and endless stories about it. And it's not. It's just totally bogus. It's based on computer models that everybody agrees are flawed. It's based on a lot of extrapolation of, you know, whether the glaciers are melting in one part of the world or another. It's just bogus. People have to understand the weather is the utter and complete definition of chaos. The greatest, most brilliant meteorologists and climatologists, some of whom are my friends, will tell you they haven't the foggiest notion what it's going to do, you know, by the end of this week.
That's true.
They don't even understand how clouds form and why they form in certain areas and why they move in certain patterns. They have no idea. I mean, they know a lot about the weather, but any weatherman who can tell you 48 hours out, beyond that 48 hours, he knows with specificity what's going to happen, is blowing smoke up your skirt.
And I can remember taking off a lot of times as an airline pilot, flying transcontinental, whichever way you want to go, east or west, and being told that the weather will be thus and such when we get there, and lo and behold, when we got there, a mere 4 hours later, or sometimes even 3 hours later, was the antithesis of what the guy said.
Exactly.
You know, and which is fun, because we get to fly more, and the people in the back get to drink more. But anyway, we're going to take our first break now with Tuesday's edition of Radio Liberty, and it's my very great pleasure to be able to sit in here for Dr. Stan this week and tell you about some of the things that are near and dear to my heart, one of which is that I try once again to encourage all of you who are listening to the sound of this radio program to become members of the Radio Liberty family of supporters. Did you know that for only $20 a month, and that's less than eating out with a family of four at McDonald's or any of those other kinds of places that you're daring to go, for $20 a month, you can become a member of the Radio Liberty family of supporters, and you'll know full well at that point in time that you are helping bear the burden of putting this kind of a radio program on the air, where we bring the truth to you. We do not have a liberal bias here. We certainly have a bias for the truth, and I hope that that comes out. If you catch us in something that we cannot corroborate or doesn't sound like it's right, you call us and find out, and we'll get back to you. That's my pledge, and I'm sure it's the pledge of Dr. Stan. So your $20, it goes a long way, and we're not going to leave you empty-handed for that $20, no. For $20 a month or more, as a member of the family of supporters, we'll send you the four very best tapes of the month, which you can send around to your friends if you want to, and listen to them over and over and over again, issues that are of importance to you. And we'll also send you a copy every month of Dr. Stan's insightful newsletter. And that, perhaps, is the most important thing of all. To read what's really happening in the world today, why don't you call right now, 800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And ask the person who answers the phone there that how you can become a member of the Radio Liberty family of supporters. Where can I send the check? How can I do it with my MasterCard or Visa or whatever? That number is 800-544-8927. Once again, 800-544-8927. We'll be back with Alan Karuba in just a couple of seconds. Don't you dare go away.
The Anglo-American establishment gives you the documentation for Professor Quigley's allegation that there was a secret society created in England that ultimately came to dominate England and ultimately came to dominate the United States of America. The Anglo-American establishment will give you the books that you can read, written by men who were actually involved in the original secret society. Professor Quigley opens his book saying that most people have heard of the Rhodes Scholarships, and a few people have actually heard that Cecil Rhodes wrote a confession of faith, which was attached to his first five wills, talking about the formation of a secret society. But what almost no one in America realizes today is that that secret society was actually formed and still exists to this very day. The Anglo-American Establishment by Professor Quigley, built on his mentor, is one of the most important books you'll ever read, and available by calling 1-800-5-HIV-WARP.
And we're back. My name is Dave Wilson, and as the Lord carries, I'll be your host for the rest of this hour and a couple of days this week as Dr. Stan is away. Put him on your prayer list so that all will go well with what he's doing around the countryside, and we'll be appreciative of that. My guest this afternoon, Alan Kariba, who is a gentleman that we have begun a tradition with, that is discussing things at the beginning of the year, and some of the things that we need to discuss, frankly, are the stories that seemed the most ludicrous that got perhaps some attention in the media. The stories, perhaps, Alan, too, that got no attention in the media, they are equally important. And then one of the things that has happened in the year 2003 that has just been an overwhelming unreported story, at least from my perspective, and I think yours, is the abrogation of the responsibility of our government to protect our borders.
That's been going on for a very long time.
Yeah,
but it's getting worse.
It's getting worse and worse. First of all, what do you think was the most ridiculous story for the year 2003? That way we can secure...
Oh, where to begin? Where to begin? As you know, Dave, at the end of every year, I do a review of what I call the most dubious news stories of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And because these just serve as indications of, you know, dozens and dozens of others, but... I'll give you an example. January, Arianna Huffington of California, a columnist, syndicated columnist, a failed California governor candidate, thank God, initiated something she called Project Detroit to get people to stop driving SUVs and other vehicles because she claimed that that helped support terrorism. Apparently, putting gas in your tank is helping Al-Qaeda or something.
You know... A lot of people have picked up on that. Gary Chideau in his Doonesbury column. I don't know whether you read that on a daily basis.
He's just totally crazed.
He's jumped on that.
I mean, anybody who reads Doonesbury and doesn't realize this man is just get a net and throw it over him. He's utterly crazed. And it's a cartoon. It's supposed to be funny. It's
right.
Supposed to be entertaining. All he does day in and day out is beat everybody over the head with the Doonesbury characters to make some great political statement, and it's nauseating.
Unbelievably biased towards the left in the way it's written, the way it is drawn, and put together the storylines. It's an amazing thing. And when we talk about SUVs and vehicles, granted, they are a big buck item, some of them, but... I suspect that a lot of people are driving them for added safety on the road. I've talked to several ladies who say they wouldn't trade theirs for anything because it gives them a new sense of safety for them and their children.
They have a big auto show in Detroit right now going on, introducing a lot of the new models and all. And the big problem that American auto manufacturers have is that the Japanese automatic manufacturers are producing better, more popular SUVs, and people are buying them. And why shouldn't they? I mean, who is to say you can't have an SUV if you can afford it and you want it? What great voice sitting in the cloud somewhere is deciding what kind of car you can drive? And this really makes me crazy.
I can imagine.
To read stuff like Huffington and to know this is a syndicated and, quote, respected, unquote, a columnist. This is... Dopey.
Every one of the items that you listed on your dubious news stories of the year had an underlying agenda, and that was a radical race towards socialism for this country.
Oh, yeah.
Global pantheistic socialism is something that is coming like a freight train without brakes down the hill towards the United States, and a lot of us seem to be sitting here looking at the headlight like a crazed deer, not able to get out of the way.
Well, let's be fair to all of us, in fact. I have a friend, Paul Dreesen, who has a wonderful book called Eco-Imperialism. It's just been published. And he notes in his research that American environmental groups, for example, have somewhere in the area of $4 billion a year with which to unleash torrents of propaganda. And internationally, the environmental movement has about $8 billion in income a year.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a lot of money to tell a lot of lies day in and day out. So it is, it's understandable that people get sucked in. But then again, there's little Alan Karuga here with the National Anxiety Center desperately trying to get by on a few donations and the book sales, saying, hey, wait a minute. Look, in September, they had the first international dry toilet conference in Finland in order to avoid what they called, and I quote, environmental disaster, unquote.
And
you know why, Dave? Because you're flushing.
Yeah.
You and everybody listening to us are flushing.
Well, when I remodeled my bathrooms, Al Gore had his way with me, and now I have to flush, of course, two or three times.
Right, because the government actually mandates how much water a modern toilet can use. Is there anything more insane than this?
Is there anything more intrusive as
well? Of course.
And we just seem to sit there and take it. Look, speaking of taking things, let's take a call from Dave now, who's calling in Illinois. Hi, Dave. Thank you for calling.
Hey, good evening.
Do you have a question or comment?
Just a quick comment.
Okay.
We guys would talk about what's happening in the business and stuff. The latest issue of the New American Magazine has an excellent article about what's happening in the manufacturing sector. And the National Association of Manufacturers did a study, and they found out that the main reason that companies have to leave this country isn't labor costs, but it's government regulation.
Mm-hmm.
They're being regulated to death. And in an article, it says, simply put, many, if not most, American businessmen who are leaving the country are not fleeing free market enterprise. They're fleeing socialism.
Absolutely. And the New American gets its line pretty straight most times. Dave, I thank you for calling. It's good for me to know that you're listening out there. Thank you.
Yeah.
And, Alan, Dave is exactly right. The New American reports what's really going on, and someday I'm going to have to do a program with some of that, because although I am not a member of the John Birch Society, I subscribe to much of what they're saying about what's going on in America today.
They make a lot of sense most of the time.
Yeah, and we're down at the bottom of the hour already with our program today, and thankfully it's going by fast, because I know Alan needs to go to bed, being back there on the right coast. Having just talked to people in Ireland, we have truly an international guest with us. But I'd like to remind you once more, ladies and gentlemen, that Radio Liberty is trying to, like Alan, get the truth out to you. We don't believe the lies that the liberal media are putting out, but we need your help. And it would be a great comfort to me to know that many of you, thousands of you, are standing shoulder to shoulder with Dr. Stan and myself, trying to get the word out about things that are going on. And there's thousands of different areas that the socialist agenda is working in, chip by chip and block by block, taking away our constitutional rights in this, the freest and greatest nation on God's green earth. We need to reveal the truth to people, and we do that through radio and through some printed things, and a lot by getting information out through tapes and so forth. You can call 800-5-HIV-WAR 544-8927 and ask for a copy of the Radio Liberty resource list, and they'll send you a book that's almost 80 pages now about stuff that you can get, stuff that you can read about, find out where your interests lie, and get some information so that you can become a defender of this faith, so to speak. I'll give you a little bit more information about that as we come back from the break at the bottom of the hour. Don't you dare go away to this edition of Radio Liberty.
tapes at genocide. And one of the tapes is an interview with a Dr. Dinigan, who heard back in 1969 actually a talk given by Dr. Day, who would later become the president of Planned Parenthood. And Dr. Day laid out the whole plan for America: the fact there are too many people, the fact that we're going to have to create new diseases, the fact that we're going to have to conceal some of the very obvious treatments for cancer, because people are going to have to die of something. They might as well die of cancer. An incredible interview, and a series of other interviews that will go into the background of what is happening in America, why new diseases are cropping up all the time. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for copies of our four-tape set, Genocide. It's vitally important that you help us to get this message out across America, because without knowledge, my people perish. America, our values, our future are under attack today.
And I want to just tell you a little bit more about that Radio Liberty resource package that you'll get if you call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. That's 544-8927. And give them your name and address, and they'll send this off to you. You'll get it within just a week or so. And has all the information about becoming a member of the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And it will give you, via a very comprehensive index, both subject and author, about different things that are going on that might be of interest to you. You know, there are some of you who are interested in the spiritual aspect of this war that we are in. Others of you are interested in the geopolitical things. Some are interested in the environmental things, other medicine. They're all weaving their way towards tightening the noose around us. Now, is that a mixed metaphor, whatever? But we're in trouble here, and Radio Liberty is one of the entities right now, I believe, that is getting the truth out. Dr. Stan does 5 hours of talk radio every day, Monday through Friday, and a couple on Saturday, and he needs your help. Your subscription to Radio Liberty via the Friends of Radio Liberty just helps underwrite the cost of getting all that stuff out. So please consider calling 800-544-8927, and at the very least, getting the free Radio Liberty information pack. We won't put your name on any list. You won't start getting a bunch of junk mail. We don't sell it to anybody else. You can rest assured of that. And, of course, I have to remind you that donations made to Radio Liberty via the Friends of Radio Liberty are not tax-deductible, because we are not a 501c3. We do not want to have somebody sitting across the desk from me while I talk about what we talk about here. We're talking this afternoon with Alan Kruba. He is the person who puts the anxietycenter.com together, writes articles. And Alan, you know, I'm seeing your name and your articles all over everywhere. Congratulations.
Yes, our motto is we cover the world like a poison gas.
And you're writing books.
Everywhere. It's
There are books available that you have written, and people can go to the website, or they can call you, or they can email
They should come to my website, because we just lowered the cost of my latest book called Warning Signs to $10, which is $5 off the cover price.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to sell a lot of them because we need to keep the website going, among other things. But it's a collection of some of my commentaries between 2000 and 2002. And yes, you are seeing a lot of my stuff around, because many of the news and opinion websites that service the interests of conservatives are picking up my work and posting it and sharing it with a couple of million people.
Congratulations on that. You claim there's no end to the unscientific claims and outrageous lawsuits intended to impose endless restrictions on everything anybody anywhere in the world might possibly enjoy, from smoking to eating to driving. And I think probably your articles will pinpoint the facts about this as we move into this age. That's what I like about you, my friend, is that you don't just say, hey, this is what's happening, we're not going to be allowed to smoke anymore, and talk to you later, but you cite the laws that are being enacted to control people's behavior and so forth and so on in every area of your expertise.
Well, I've been a business and science writer most of my life, and as a result, I'm you know, have a great affection for facts.
Mm-hmm.
And I conversely dislike lies, and this is really what got me started with the anxiety centers, I just got fed up with what I knew were, from a scientific point of view, just outright lies about environmental issues and whatever. And so it's kind of evolved ever since 1990, and I must be doing something right, because as you pointed out, my commentaries are, you can read them on CNSnews.com, and we have one on there today talking about the issues on the Mexican-American border.
And that's exactly where we want to move to right now.
All right.
I believe that we are fighting two wars here in these United States. One is a war for our borders. The other is a war for our skies and other places. We have been imposed upon by a radical Islamic jihad brought to our shores by whatever means they possibly can do. We were caught unaware. We have moved since that point in time to becoming a little bit safer, perhaps, certainly a lot more restricted. And maybe the airline business is beginning to pick up again, but these stories about new threats and what's going on in British Airways and so forth is causing fear, which will cause a dip in the income for airlines.
Well, you know, it's about time that these foreign airlines begin paying attention to who the heck is getting on.
Really?
I mean, you know, we learned that the hard way here in the United States on September 9th, 2001, or September 11th, I mean, we learned that the hard way. We lost over 3,000 citizens in the airplanes and in the buildings and in the Pentagon. You know, holy smokes, what does it take to get people to realize that, okay, there may be a little inconvenience at the airport, but we got to take a look at who's getting on these planes, because there's some serious lunatics out there. And you're absolutely right. This is a religious war being waged by radical Islam. And I only wish you could see the email I get from Muslims who are very unhappy with me. But that's okay. I'm very unhappy with them, too.
Yeah, and, you know, we are not denigrating religious thought of people who are willing to sit by and enjoy their own way of going to God, if you will. I have serious considerations about that, according to what the Bible tells me. But there is a theme that runs through the Islamic religion, one of violence and jihad. And
it's a warrior cult.
Exactly. And
the Quran is a game plan for war.
And you said it yourself just a couple of minutes ago. When are the people going to realize that that's going on? We see our president saying Islam is a religion of peace and we need to embrace that side of it and all. It's nonsense.
That's politics. He's president of all the people. He's the most powerful man on the face of the earth politically and militarily. He has to say a lot of things to make sure that millions of people that hear everything he has to say every day, don't get their nose out of joint. But the simple fact is that's just political hogwash.
Well,
he knows probably better than anybody from his daily briefings by the CIA just how serious a threat this fundamentalist Muslim sect is. And, you know, there's over a billion two Muslims in the world. Now, there are a lot of really nice, good, decent Muslims in the world that don't go along with the fundamentalists, but the fundamentalists, the estimates I've heard, represent about 100 million of that billion.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's a lot of people with some really bad attitudes, and some of them willing to strap a bomb on themselves and kill other people because, you know, in the name of Allah.
Right.
Or to get in a plane and kill a lot more people, and for the same reason, they're seriously deranged. This is not a religious issue. This is an issue of serious pathology. And I would remind you, in history, nations have done this in the past. The Germans, who were steeped in Christian religion, fell prey to the Nazis. With their propaganda and their notion of a master race and what have you. The Japanese fell prey to the warlords with their notion that the emperor was a god and the code of Bushido was the warrior was the way to go, and that's how they justified what they did. Well, we ended up with World War II, And, you know, and what, 60 million people later who, you know, dead, paid the price for that kind of pathology. Well, we're looking at that kind of pathology coming out of the Middle East right now.
And you mix that in with the sense of political correctness that has permeated American society. That is, we certainly can't say anything bad about anybody because that wouldn't be embracing them in a multicultural sense, you know.
Well,
it's a recipe for disaster.
I take people one at a time. If they treat me nicely and aren't, you know, in the process of trying to kill me, I'm perfectly willing to put out the hand of friendship. But the simple fact is we have religious-based movements that express themselves in the form of Al-Qaeda and the Palestinian movements, the Hamas and the Hezbollah. We have religious-based movements that are just murderous and have no restraints on what they can and will do.
Absolutely.
And that makes them extremely dangerous.
I have seen videos from the Palestinian news over in the Gaza Strip that recorded a talk show, literally, of a grown man who was a facilitator in a conversation with three or four people who looked to be 12 or 13 years of age, talking about how great it is to be in jihad and how wonderful it is to be able to give your life for the state and for Allah and for your family and so forth. And of course, we don't see any of this in the media. But those things were captured by a Palestinian Newswatch, I believe it is, which is a nonprofit based in Jerusalem there, that captures these videos that are being sent all around the Middle East and puts them on videotape and sends them out. But, of course, we see nothing of that. Americans keep thinking that, you know, if we just keep trying to help these people, that they will turn the other cheek, so to speak. And just lay down.
Not going to happen. The Palestinians, on a political basis, were offered statehood or independence back in 1979, several times in the 1980s, again in the 1990s, and they rejected it every time, and they generally rejected it by blowing up a bus or a restaurant full of, you know, innocent non-combatants. The Palestinians essentially have a nation. It's called Jordan.
Exactly.
There never was a Palestinian people. There never was a Palestinian nation. This is all nonsense. It is an effort to obliterate the nation of Israel, and that's all it is. And again, it's religious based. They believe that Islam has to destroy Israel and control Jerusalem if it's to have any credibility. And from their point of view, that's how they go about it. But again, they go about it as warriors.
Exactly. And
diplomacy for the Israelis, diplomacy has only produced corpses.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to understand that. These people have a sovereign right to self-defense. Frankly, I don't care what they do to protect themselves.
And we don't have the understanding of the passion that the militant Islam puts upon these people.
Oh, yeah.
They come from an area of poverty. They have nothing to live for. They're promised by their clerics and through their false writings that they will be in paradise whenever it happens. You know, today there was another thing in Afghanistan by a radical Islamic group, a Taliban. Their scenario was to explode a small bomb and then children's area. I don't remember whether it was a play yard or a schoolyard.
Oh, that's nice.
They shot the bomb off. Nobody was hurt there. But 3 minutes later, after all the kids had run over to see what was going on and the police had arrived, et cetera, et cetera, a second, larger bomb went off and it killed 15 people. Now, these are the same people who would say that we are all one in Islam and it's a religion of love. But, you know, after they get the Jews, they're coming after the Christians and those people of the book there.
The persecution of Christians in the Middle East is an offense to mankind.
And then come the Hindus, the Buddhists, everybody else, and then comes the tribal stuff amongst themselves. You know, there is no end to the violence in Islam. And
The problem with the Middle East is Islam. And the problem in the world right now is Islam. This is a religion that, unlike Christianity, is unable to go through any process of reformation, any process of change. It's 1,700 years old, and it is unable to change the very nature of it, prevents change from occurring. So you have people who worship Islam are basically operating with the mindset set of the 7th century.
And that's where they want to go back to.
It doesn't work in the 21st century. It will not work. And my personal theory, and I've written about this, is that we're actually watching the early stages of the decline and fall and end of Islam.
Well, that's an interesting thought. I really hadn't thought about that before. I tend to look at it the other way around. But nevertheless, do you still have available that pocket guide to Islam on your website?
We do. We have.
Tell us about that, because there might be some people who are interested in that. It's a very well-written piece.
Well, thank you. It's called the Pocket Guide to Militant Islam, and it gives you, in a very concise fashion, an insight to what's been going on vis-a-vis why militant Islam has arisen and where it's going. It's fairly new. It started around 1979 with the overthrow of the Shah of Iran, and it's been one continual attack on American military and embassies and diplomats ever since.
And we see it, we saw it in our skies, we see it around now in Iraq, the things that are going on, the disregard for a person being age or sex or whatever, it doesn't make any difference. Terror is the backbone of this thing.
It's the only way that Islam is able to maintain itself. I mean, if you are a Muslim and you decide to leave Islam for another religion, which many Muslims have done, the penalty is death in the Middle East.
Absolutely. One of the people that used to work at this radio station is now a missionary in Iraq, and praise the Lord. His success there is truly astounding. And if you want more information about that particular person, give me a call after the show, ladies and gentlemen. I'd be happy to put you on to where you can send some support to that gentleman who had a radio program. Some of you may have listened to, but anyway, you can get this pocket guide to Islam by going to www.anxietycenter.com, and there's a very easy way for you to get it there that we don't need to discuss right here right now. But we're talking with Alan Karuba. He is the head honcho of the Anxiety Center. We've talked about the war that the United States of America and all the free world is fighting with Islam, but more to the point, here in California and other places, we also have a war with Mexico going on to some degree, don't we?
We do. It's the topic of the commentary on the website. I have a weekly commentary called Warning Signs, and it's this week's Warning Signs starts off with a segment about a renewed Mexican-American war. You know, we fought a couple of wars with Mexico. First, the folks from Texas to get independent, and another war, and a decade after the independence of Texas, we negotiated a treaty where we ended up with most of the Southwest as well. So the Mexicans didn't fare very well on the battlefield, and now they've decided there's a great way to get all that land back, and that is to fill it up with Mexicans.
And they seem to be doing remarkably well.
Well, today in America, 58% of America's Hispanic population is Mexican. The Latinos make up about 30% of California's population, and now they account for more than half of all the births in the Garden State. The Golden State.
You're
in the Golden State. And you know, do the math. There are 37 million Hispanic Americans.
The people who are tending your garden, by the way, Alan, are very likely of Hispanic origin out there in the Garden State.
Now, those Hispanic Americans who give their allegiance to America, God bless them.
Amen.
Welcome to America. But the problem is that this huge flood of Mexicans who are coming across the borders and even becoming legal immigrants, remain Mexicans. They do not become Mexican Americans in the sense that they change their allegiance, and this is being prodded and helped and supported by Mexico. They're changing their own constitution to allow anyone who's become an American to also regain their Mexican quote-unquote nationality.
Mm-hmm.
They're changing their own federal legislation so that you'll have millions of what were Americans of Mexican descent who will now also be able, under Mexican law, to become Mexicans again. No. You know, when you take that oath to become an American, it means your loyalty is here, not across the border.
We're going to have to stop right there for just a minute because we're at our last break of the afternoon talking with Alan Karuba. He's the chief honcho of the National Anxiety Center. And I hope that you're enjoying this program. You could call us if you want to at 888-245-4237 or 464-8295. We're going to have a brief message here, a brief break. We'll get back for the remaining few minutes of the program. I want you to listen carefully to the words that are going on right now because they're important. And I'll give you some additional important information as we come back from this break.
Have you ever wondered what the Vietnamese War was really all about? Why America, the most powerful nation in the world, spent 10 years fighting in Southeast Asia against a nation the size of the state of Mississippi, and America lost that war? Do you really believe that happened by accident? There's so much to the story of Vietnam that the American people have never really known. And in our four-tape set, Vietnam, the Untold Story, you're going to get the information that you need to understand the tragedy of that event. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for Vietnam, the Untold Story, the story of what really happened in Vietnam that has been suppressed from the American people for the last 20 years.
At 52 minutes past the hour, we've got about 6 or 7 minutes left on our conversation this Tuesday afternoon with Alan Karuba. My name's Dave Wilson. Dr. Stan will be away for the rest of the week. My guest tomorrow, Debbie O'Hara, will be talking about the basis for this great nation, that is our law and our faith. And so don't you fail to tune in there, if I can be that aggressive. And then on Thursday, we have Mr. Henry Lamb, and on Friday, Michael Kaufman. So we've got a great lineup for the rest of this week on issues that need to be addressed. In my perspective, I suppose, Dr. Stan has had these people on before and often, and I have too, and it's important that we continue to get it out because repetition makes reputation, I believe, don't you, Alan?
Well, it certainly helps, hammer home the facts.
And, you know, one of these things, let's face it, Mexico is encouraging this illegal immigration because billions of dollars are flowing into the coffers of Mexico, and the government doesn't want to fix their economy or can't fix their economy, and all this money from the U.S. is the only thing that's holding it afloat.
They are a third world nation on the border of a first world nation. And the immigrants here, legal and illegal, in the United States, it's estimated they send about $14.5 to $17 billion back to Mexico every year. It is the second largest source of foreign income for Mexico after oil.
And ladies and gentlemen, you have to understand that Alan and I are not saying in any way, shape, or form that Mexican Americans or Americans who come from Mexico are in any way not wanted here. But the traditions and history of this country have shown that you need to invest yourself in, one, the learning of the language, and two, an assimilation of this culture in order to be successful here, rather than creating an enclave of Spanish language and Spanish heritage. Isn't that right?
This is very true. The Mexican Americans have shown a reluctance to assimilate in terms of language and other aspects of our culture. It should be said that in California, a large part of the Mexican-American population very much favors restrictions on the illegal Mexican immigrants that are flooding into California.
And they want English taught in the schools, Alan.
They want English taught in the schools. They understand the dynamics of getting ahead in America. And they also understand that the 8 to 12 million illegal immigrants in this country, not all of them Mexican, but those immigrants just drain our resources in terms of the schools, our hospitals, our highways. 25% of the prison population in America is made up of illegal immigrants,
and proportionately taking
a lot
more
of crime coming out of this community.
Right. I believe that as you read the news reports of crime in the community, you'll see a distinct trend, if not a distinct fact, that a lot of these people are of Hispanic origin. Now, look, there's a simple solution to this, I suspect, and in the several minutes that we have left, Alan, comment on the fact that why don't our governmental agencies obey the law and shut down our borders?
I wish I had the answer. The simple fact of the matter is that our enforcement on the borders is way underfunded. There's not enough people. You know, because we only have a few minutes. We're hearing all this screaming about building a fence between the Israelis and the Palestinians in Gaza. And, oh, it's terrible! It's a fence, and yeah. Well, we have great big fences in San Diego, mm-hmm. and along large sections of our border with Mexico. And those fences are reasonably effective in deterring some of the flow across the border every day. And we're talking thousands of people a month. And let's not talk about they come here to work. The fact is there are jobs aplenty in America, but they belong to Americans. And maybe there are jobs aplenty. The fact of the matter is the unemployment rates are down. Down below 6%, which means that those people that want a job pretty much have a job these days.
The jobs in Mexico, however, you have to empathize with the people of that third world country and the countries below Mexico in Central America. A man trying to make do for his family is trying the best he can, and this is one thing that he can do. Now, to the detriment of our country, we have allowed this to come in, and it's beginning to take its toll, and there are those who would say that the Mexican government is trying to take back what Santa Anna gave away.
It's a deliberate policy of the Mexican government to encourage Mexicans to come across the border, as we noted earlier, because they do send a lot of money back into Mexico, and it's a great aid to the economy. Mexico has been mismanaged for decades and decades.
Exactly.
And, the time is to call it a halt is like yesterday.
Hey, the time to call this a halt is now. I'm sorry to say we have enjoyed this conversation, Alan. It always goes by too quickly when you're aboard, my friend. So
thank you.
Thank you so much. Get some rest now, and I'll be in contact. God bless you.
Thank you. God bless. Bye-bye.
Alan Kuruba is a guest regularly when Dave Wilson's portion of Radio Liberty comes up, and I hope that you will continue to listen for the rest of this week. Put Dr. Stan and myself on your prayer list. Put the United States of America on your prayer list as well, because this is a spiritual battle we're fighting, ladies and gentlemen, and we need God's help. Until tomorrow, as the Lord tarries, Dave Wilson saying so long.